Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 25, for the week of January 15th, 2007. Recovering from the Macworld hangover. Hey everybody, this is Alex, and we are back, recovering from Macworld. I'm here with John Foster.
Hello everybody.
Hey, and Merlin Mann.
Hello.
No one else could make it, they were all recovering. We had a, if you guys didn't see the almost 3 hours of content that we put up last week, you can go to twit.tv and Macworld. At Macworld, we were all over the place with lots and lots of cameras and lots of hosts and some new hosts. And we actually let Merlin in front of a camera.
I don't think it went that badly.
I think it went great. It was a lot of fun.
We got to talk to a lot of developers, which was fun. I mean, Kendra covered iPod stuff and mm-hmm. Justine covered, but accessories. But mm-hmm. yeah, it was fun. I went out and talked to a bunch of developers and it was an exciting week.
I had a lot of fun doing it. It was a lot of fun putting it together. John, did you enjoy it?
I know my feet hurt at the end, and it was, well.
Walking, I wore a pedometer.
It was a lot of walking around.
Yeah, I got in good shape.
I wore a pedometer, and I walked 20 miles in 3 days.
Wow. Did you really wear a pedometer?
I'm that guy.
I will say that the big disappointment was actually seeing an iPhone in person.
Really?
Yeah, because you know what it looked like? The back of somebody's head. Well, no, you're standing next to the crystal that looks like something out of Superman, and there's the artifact inside the spinny thing.
It needed to spin a bit faster,
but anyway, it looked, I mean, you go up to the thing and like, ooh, this is going to be cool. And then
that first day was incredible. When like, just the people, the look, actually, I put a photo on 43 folders that Duncan Davidson
did. You put it on the MacBreak Flickr?
I'll ask him if he'll upload it, but it's a tremendous photo of just these people transfixed. And that's what it was like. Yeah. When they first let people into the expo right after the keynote, it was extraordinary. Everybody made a beeline for these two phones.
They're just staring out there. Look at that phone.
That's why it looked like the back of somebody's head.
Yeah. And I think the security guard added a lot to that.
Yeah, right.
He was standing there really going, like, these are mine. You can't touch. Don't even look at them.
So the iPhone has, it's now that the Steve's distortion field is starting to wear off. You know, when we saw it on Tuesday, we were, ready to pay $10,000 for it right now, right here, ready to have it. And now we've had some time to look at it. We've had some time to talk about it. And there's the first issue is that there's lawsuits. So what I think is interesting about the lawsuits is that Steve was so out there about, we have 200 patents and we're going to defend them. And then, of course, other people start defending theirs related to the iPhone. And so the first one up on the blocks is, of course, Cisco. Cisco, first Apple says everything's fine. Then a day later, Cisco's suing them. What's that all about?
Well, Cisco basically had this idea, or actually not an idea, but they had it on paper. It's even in the U.S. Patent Trademark Database that they had the iPhone mark.
So they had here's the question though: is that did they really have the idea, or did they buy a company that bought a company that had the idea? Because the iPhone trademark was by somebody who was bought by Info. Now I don't have it in front of me. See, I made the guys put the laptop away now.
Well, the thing is it really doesn't matter who they bought and what they got. They got the asset of that. The trademark got registered to Cisco, and it's been sitting in their portfolio since 2001.
And there's rumors that, I mean, well, not rumors, there's speculation that it actually expired in the middle of 2006.
Well, the thing with the trademark is that in order for it to be upheld, in order for it to continue to work, is that the company has to be active in its trade. They actually have to have stuff in the marketplace that's called that people can buy. They just can't sit on a mark, and you can sit on a mark for, with the intent to use, But that goes away after 5 years, 3 years, 5 years, something like that.
So Vista really does need to get to market soon.
Or maybe it's 7 years. But the point is that it came up it came up at the end of 2005 that it was running out. They filed for an extension, which you can do for another 6 months, but it was still further out before they announced the iPhone. And the iPhone that Cisco announced was literally a phone that they already make, and they put a sticker on the on the box.
Well, it's basically their VoIP phone product. So, which is a really cool phone. It's an 802.11 base phone.
But it already existed.
I know. Well, I mean, I've held one in my hand, and you know what? When I bought it, it wasn't called an iPhone.
Right.
It was called something else. And so they go, oh, we got to protect this. They slap a sticker on it. They call it an iPhone. It's not an iPhone.
And people have pointed out that the iPhones, well, the quote-unquote Apple iPhones that we've seen so far, do not have the word iPhone etched into them.
And I did talk to someone from Apple who will remain nameless. It was on the floor. And the response to what about the suit was mostly a shrug and going, we'll change the name. It's not about the name.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Because it seems to me like it's not...
Well, they could change. They could call it an iPod phone. They could call it, you know, what did I call
Pod
it?
Pod phone.
A possum phone or
something. Remember a few weeks ago when this all first came up, I think it was Scott and was saying, well, you know, I knew all along that it was never going to be the iPhone.
That's I don't think terrible. That. I think he was just saying.
Yeah, I know. I think so too. He's not here to defend himself, but I'm not sure it really matters. I think, you know,
what's getting people excited is not that they picked the right name. What's getting them excited is all the theoretical features that we're going to see when we actually
from the Mac world of vaporware.
Let's underline and put in bold the theoretical part of that statement.
So what do you mean by that?
I mean that, okay, well, the first thing that I was excited about was that it has a browser in it called Safari. Well, it turns out that Safari is not Safari.
Right.
So when I hear the word Safari, I think WebKit, which means I'm going to have JavaScript, which means I'm going to have Flash, which means I'm going to have Java, which means I'm going to have, you know, a whole lot of specific functionality that's been defined by by Safari in the Mac being what it is. So if they call it Safari, then I'm kind of expecting it to
support everything that Safari
like Safari does.
Yeah, and at the same time, when I was sitting there in the MacBreak nerd pit on Tuesday morning and they announced OS 10, a lot of us, of course, immediately, maybe naively, thought, okay, you're going to be able to take some version of applications that are available for OS 10 and run them on.
So some of the things that we are now aware that we're missing is, A, you're not going to be able to develop applications for the iPhone.
Well, the word, as I understand it, I mean, I want to be careful not to overstate this. I think what I've heard said is that they are going to control whatever goes on there.
Right. So you have to work with Apple. So Apple's going to be your distributor.
It's not
going to
be the Wild West. It's not going to be the Trio. It's not going to be something where it's going to be like shareware, you know, 1990.
Right. But if they call it OS 10, you know, if they put the air quotes OS 10 on it, then you're kind of expecting to be able to do OS 10 things. That means Xcode. That means command line stuff. That means, you know,
it's a smaller version of XT. But here's the thing: is this good or bad for iPhone users?
Well, this is the interesting part, because I mean, somewhere when I first started kind of whining about the apparent inability to run independent third party apps, the retort from a lot of people was, oh well, you know, all that Slack is going to get picked up in the browser, and of course you'll have this. I mean, so you know, I was slightly consoled by the idea that while I might not be able to have Omni Outliner running on my phone, I would at least have the ability to run things like whatever, Stick It, Backpack, you name it, your favorite WYSI AJAX application, because that can be pretty robust. And to be honest, it was exciting to think that you could see a lot of movement in the Web 2.0 space based on that. Now, a lot of this, we still don't really know exactly what's going to come out. Right. But if what's just John's describing is correct, that is a karma suck.
It's a huge karma suck. Besides, you know, if like when you hear OS 10, you go, oh my gosh, I've got an Apache server in the background that I can run locally, which means that I can run Ruby apps, which means that I can run Perl apps. Why would I want to? But I could, you know, those kind of things. And so now, that's all in the background. But this is the key point, is we don't even know if we can open a local HTML file from my shared space. Like if I put it in hard drive mode, I'm pretty sure, 100%.
No, I guarantee you won't be able
to. Yeah, you won't be able to open that thing.
Right, because so, you can't with an
not
iPod.
Not only do
you
we not
it.
Know, but developers
yeah.
so well, far the, don't know.
The now, Steve Jobs says that the issue is you don't want your phone to start crashing. You know, people start developing for it, the phone starts crashing, they're not going to blame the developer who wrote some little applet. They're going to blame Apple for their phone isn't stable. What do you think of that? What is your answer to Steve?
Well, I don't know enough about phone networks to speak intelligently about that, but the two things that come to mind are, well, A, well, my Trio works pretty fine for me, and I'm not sure that any crashes that I've had are directly related to too many third-party apps. And second, well, then why don't we close up the Mac too?
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to have people break your China, I guess you should always just maybe not even buy it.
Well, but it's different. I think that people, you know, when your Mac crashes, it's right. One thing. When your phone is crashing and you're on the road and you can't. And well, I speak as someone who has had trouble with my Trio.
Yeah.
But, you know,
well, I get boot trouble. So I can have on my Trio, I mean, just to distinguish, I don't get a lot of crashes. I think when I get a bad piece of software, that's when you get a big boot problem and you got to do a hard reset. But I mean, I don't know enough to know, but that sounds a little bit like an excuse to cover up the fact that Singular probably really doesn't.
But if it is OS X, then we know
it's got protected memory.
It's got protected memory. And,
well, and I think that, I guess, it seems that there is some sensitivity to, there's a couple things that Apple has to protect, or we would think that Apple might be trying to protect. Number one is they're protecting iTunes distribution. So the thing is that right now your iPod is locked to iTunes. If anybody could develop any app for the iPhone, they could do a Rhapsody client.
Or Democracy.
Or, well, Democracy, you can move the stuff from Democracy into iTunes and then you can watch it. But the thing is that suddenly you could build an app that would interface with Napster, Rhapsody, be able to theoretically play back Windows media files, all those things on your iPod. It would open the iPod up for that. Secondly, you would be able to bypass a lot of the stuff that Singular would prefer you not to be doing.
Well, maybe that's a reason right there to not embrace this device.
And one quickie.
But are you not going to embrace this device?
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing.
It's hard to know until we can really. See, the problem is we're all sitting here trying to like read the tea leaves.
Yeah.
And there's some things that we know. I sound like Donald Rumsfeld. There's some things we know here, and there's a lot of unknown unknowns too. And so personally, I'm out of the prognostication business. I'm going to stop guessing and wait till this stuff actually starts approaching what's going to hit the market. I mean, we can get ourselves into a tizzy about all this stuff, but until it comes out, there's no way to know.
So maybe we shouldn't even talk about this until like we get our until one is melting in our hands.
Well, one thing we do know, or I think what John knows, is what are we looking at for a data package on Singular right now?
It's
assuming we can do this WYSI stuff.
It's expensive.
I have no interest in using the data package except for extreme emergencies. The big thing is that I think what I'm excited about is that a lot of the kind of forward thinking cities are now starting to open up Wi-Fi through the entire here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
By the end of this year is what we're promised. Is that we're going to be able to have wireless, free wireless throughout the entire city.
Provided by Google?
Provided by Earthlink / Google / the city. It's technically the city is just simply providing access to light poles for Google to put it up in
some
the agreement.
Power.
Yeah. So the point is that means that anywhere in San Francisco, you're going to be able to open up your iPhone and you're going to get really fast speeds and you're not going to be using Singular to do it. Now, that's not going to work everywhere, and that may or may not be to the Singular's advantage. It probably is because we get used to using it all, and then we go out of that area, and we still use it because...
You go home for Christmas, and you want that data package.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Well, you know, this brings up the next thing, which is that the huge missing app, as far as I'm concerned, is the VoIP client.
Well, I wouldn't hold your breath for that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, holding my breath till June would just not work.
Well, and I think that not only do we not know all the details between now and the next 6 months, we also don't know all the details between now and the next 2 years. Apple did not
have... That's right, the 1.1.
Apple had to bend over backwards to get the record companies to work with them for iTunes,
yeah.
And now they have their, you know, cojones in a vice. You know, and that's the thing. Apple sells 30 million iPods... And there's a whole lot of firmware upgrades that can go on 2 years down the road that can change the reality very quickly.
Well, and I thought that the number that Steve gave in the Steve note was really low, saying that they were going to sell 10 million phones in 2008. I'm like, that's it?
Well, it's better to underguess than.
Yeah, I mean, that's way underguess.
Apple will sell as many iPhones as they can make.
But, okay, so last thing, quick poll. Did you feel like after the reality distortion field was starting to fade away, did you really feel like me that you had filled in a lot of dots, space between the dots on your own?
Well, I think that we have this imagination.
I realized how much I had like gone, whoa, you know, actually, he didn't say that. I just assumed that's what he meant. It was so Wizard of Oz.
I think that we all have this imaginary phone in our head of what we really want. Apple took us about 80% towards that phone.
Theoretically.
theoretically, I mean, but from what they've actually said, that's 80% of what a lot of us would want. And most of us in our own special way added another 20%, the other 20% going, and that would be the perfect phone. All the other phones that we've had up until now got to 40 or 50%, you know, at best. And for many of us, 20 or 30% of what we want. And so that's the, you know, and Singular has proven that it'll do exactly what the phone companies do, which is a lot of the dumbing down that we're getting. Some of it's Apple, but I bet you a lot of it's Singular. And that's going to be, until Apple has market share, market power, I think that that one's going to be a hard one to get around. I think hackers are going to have a lot of fun with it. And I'll probably hack my phone to VoIP, like in a heartbeat. I bet you it won't take very long before people are hacking up the hacking in VoIP access.
It should be noted that I still don't have a phone.
There you go.
We could tell because you couldn't get in the building
tonight. And since John doesn't have a phone and I don't have a TV, let's talk about Apple TV. So once again, distortion field starting to wear off. This is the first. This is our hangover from Macworld. So we were all excited last week. This week
clears.
The fog is starting to clear.
We want to eat our arm off.
I've been pretty meh about this from the time I heard about it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
John?
Apple TV.
What do you think of Apple TV?
You know, I still say that the Mac Mini is like the bomb when it comes to hanging on the back of a TV.
Twice as much.
Twice as much, but does a lot more. You have the idea. You have a FireWire port on the on it. You've got capability.
And I think that makes sense. That makes sense for a geek, but does it make sense for our mom and dad?
Yeah, it does, because here's the thing. You have the ability to put a whole all different kinds of media types on that Mac, not just MPEG-4 formatted movies.
But do my parents care?
Yeah.
I don't think they do.
They do care.
I don't think they do. What they want to know is, I think the target audience for this is people using iTunes. You know, like literally, we're geeks. We want to use all this different stuff. We want to do all this other stuff. But I think that the target audience for this is people who like to buy their songs. It's the guy who spent bought 10,000 songs on iTunes.
You almost have me sold on this. We were talking about this before the show, and you've almost got me sold on that idea. I'm still mulling that over, because to me, the devil is in the details with how long it takes to push your movies out and stuff like that. It is 802.11g, or N rather. So it is.
How fast is 802.11n?
Pretty fast, apparently.
It's 110.
Five times faster than G? Is that
110 megabits?
110. It's basically 2x.
So it can move 20 megabytes.
2x, okay.
It can move 20 megabytes a second.
That's right.
Approximately.
Approximately.
I'm shooting high.
Well, because 15. Because the...
let's say 10.
Because G is 54 megabits.
Right.
And...
just to kind of put this in perspective, 15 megabytes a second. Most of what you're going to watch, a 1280 by 720... is going to be probably running in the, at best, five. So it's loading twice as fast to it as you are watching it.
Theoretically.
But what makes up for that is a buffer.
Yeah, so it's like QuickTime. You start watching it, yeah.
Seconds. I bet my guarantee that ITV with a buffer will be able to, you'll be able to watch an HD feed 10 seconds, 30 seconds after you hit go.
So the reason that you've almost got me convinced of this, and I still, again, my marker for all this now is I actually want to actually see it in use. But the reason you've almost got me sold on it is because of the thin end of the wedge argument. And you know, we always use the notional dumb parents, but I mean, it could be anybody. It could be me. I'm one of those people who's now heavily invested in iTunes. And I bought, so we've got a season pass for 30 Rock, and we've got a season pass for Battlestar Galactica.
What is it now? There's 2 billion reasons why people are going to use iTunes.
Well, you know, the thing is, they do have you buy the media. And the ability to have an easy way to hook that up and have it just work is pretty enticing. So, again, because I am officially, as of this week, out of the prognostication business, I will wait to see what it actually looks like. One thing for me, I don't want to call it a deal killer, but some of the Creative Commons content that I download from the internet is DivX encoded. And it's my understanding that you cannot run DivX on this,
DivX,
John.
DivX does not play on
So if you've got some AVIs that you've pulled down off the internet, you're not going to be able to stream these.
Well, not instantly. But if you're pulling the AVIs off the internet, you're probably tech savvy enough to know how to convert them to QuickTime.
In which case, do I want to spend this much money on a box when I could go roll my own?
Right. Well, or you can, like I said, you could use a Mac Mini or the Netgear thing.
Or an old Mac.
Or an old Mac.
Yeah, and there's other boxes. Cisco's theoretically.
But I mean, we can't play both sides of the street on this.
If you're a geek and you want to hack stuff in, there's going to be other boxes for
iTunes plays MP3s. Right? That's the thing.
It plays MP3s.
And so
it'll play it across the ITV.
But you see my analogy here. This thing apparently is not going to play DivX AVIs. So, I mean, I think that's, I don't know. That's probably not going to be a deal killer for our fake dumb parents that we've made up. But I think it's a little bit of a bummer for that whatever percentage that would go, okay, for me, this is, I'll just say for me and a lot of my dorky friends, that would be the last mile.
Right but there. I think Apple doesn't.
Not an issue.
I don't think they care. Yeah.
We don't know. I mean, without actually seeing it, seriously.
Hey, welcome back to This Week
in
Vaporware.
Welcome back to the
What did they actually, is there anything, what did they put out that we can hold in our hands at the show?
They released an Airport Extreme.
No, they didn't.
No, we don't. We can't get one yet. We can't get one yet.
But
see, we're talking about that. Nothing. It's kind of like
it's this
my
week
friend's
vaporware.
It's This Week in Vaporware.
It's TWIV.
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 I got to tell you though, I am kind of excited about the Airport Extreme. This is the weird little funny Trojan horse product that I think needs a little bit more attention.
Why are you so excited about this? You got to get. We walked in and Merlin, he was literally hopping on one leg
You know what it is. Oh, first of all, after Steve's stun ray finally wore off after a few days, I started to read a little bit more about this, and it is kind of funny. They really snuck this in somewhat under the radar screen. Now this is not going to be for everybody. If you've got like, for example, at home right now, I've got a WRT54G, which is like the canonical awesome Linksys hackable router, which
Did
I love.
Hack it?
Yeah, I just got Sveasoft. I've got, better firmware running on it. For those of you who need a router to English dictionary, that's just a way of adding some extra functionality to your router. It's a Linux, it basically runs on Linux, and you just change the firmware to let it do lots of great stuff. And that's mostly been fine for me. But if I want to share a printer, like if I want a printer on my network, I've got an Airport Express for that. If I want to extend that network, I got to buy all this stuff. So for me, I've held off buying the Airport Extreme previously because meh, right? I mean, it's just a lot more money for what the Linksys does for what now, like 60, 80 bucks?
Right.
At 179?
It's 170 bucks.
I'm very attracted at the idea.
What are the features?
Well, a few things. First of all, it's by Apple, which means that my now, as of tonight, 5 Airport Expresses should work seamlessly with it.
When they don't right now with the other.
Well, there's a little bit of hackery involved, especially if you want to get, remind me the name of it, WPA. Getting WPA running is a little bit over Merlin's head. And so right now, I know. Well, I'm not you, John.
I made the squint.
See, this is why you need to come to my house and fix me.
Okay.
So what are the features that I love about this? It's got 3 Ethernet ports on the back. So you can run your Mac.
So you can have 3 Macs run into the Airport.
Just extreme. Hardware, just running from
Well, you have one of them has to be going to the internet.
It goes to the router.
That's a separate port, right?
Is that a separate port? So you have 3 outs.
You got 3 RJ45s. So what are they?
Yeah, they're RJ45s.
3 RJ45s. You've got a USB. Here's where the sexy comes. You've got a USB 2 port that you can plug. Guess what? Go back to 4 episodes ago. Plug. Back in time. You can put your pizzazz in. No, you can totally plug a big ass drive into it. So you can have a network. It's got built in. You can have an NAS drive basically hanging right off your router.
Yeah.
It gets better. You can also plug in a multi-unit hub, and you can run several hard drives off it. And apparently, theoretically, it's got very granular control over who can do what with what. So think about the Apple server days, file server days, and that's the idea. So I guess I like this because this, without getting into the amount of frippery that John's going to get into with his home-baked NAS
Frank-N-Max
Time
G4.
Sync. I like the idea. That's a price point that I can handle for rigging all this stuff up and having a big-ass 1 terabyte or 2 terabyte drive on my system.
Well, this has been something that Apple's needed in the product line since forever, which is something that is a home server, you know, where you can easily have one drive being shared amongst everybody for pictures, photos.
Backup.
Wait, that's the same thing.
I like to keep my images, my pictures, and my photos on different drives. But is this something you think Microsoft has done well?
No.
Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely a necessity. We've gone over this again and again, the need for backup today and the need for automated backup that you don't have to think about. I want to quit filling up these 250 gig C drives. Right. I want some kind of one-stop solution.
Well,
and
the thing is
RAID?
The single spin.
RAID, is that what I need?
Yeah.
No, well, we go through probably 3 to 4 3 to 4 raw drives a week. You know, they're literally just plugged in the raw drive. You know, we use the Weebitech. You've seen the Weebitech.
Oh yeah, we did a little. You just hook it up through the port, and it's like its own little. It's,
so you take the raw drive and you hook it into this little Rebotech interface.
So this is the thing where you've got just literally like an internal, like an IDE drive sitting there naked.
Naked. You can see them out there. They're in the plastic cases they were shipped in. So we just store them in the plastic cases they came in. There's stacks of them. I mean, we you know, and but that's our backup. And we label them. We put them in a database, and we know where they're at. And you know, like someone asked me this morning, like, where are we going to store all the DV tapes? Because we've got DV tapes everywhere, and we need to organize them. I said, I'll tell you where we're going to store them. We're going to store them on a hard drive. We're going to digitize them all. You know, it's easier for me to digitize them all onto a hard drive than it is to keep the tapes.
Well, I'm just going to chime in here and say that a single spindle drive is not the most reliable thing.
So you think get a RAID 5?
I think that the forward thinking is RAID 5.
Spend a little more, get an Infran or a Buffalo.
Have a couple of those too.
Yeah, but the idea is that if you have things that are memories or things that are very important to you.
No, we don't do this for things that are important. No, these are things that are thing. Like, this is, we this, better keep okay. it kind
Sorry,
of thing.
Sorry, this is a production problem. So for the kids at home that are saving their home movies of their kids for the next 10 years or lifetime, single spindle drives are not the way to go.
I really think that the future, and we were and I really thought about this when we were talking about ZFS the other
was that This Week in Media.
This Week in Media, we went into like a 15-minute incredibly deep and confusing. Well, it was one of those things that John and Kenji started talking about. I stopped talking about it. I just stopped talking. I just listened because I had no idea what they were talking about.
It was like discovering the cave full of crystals.
Yeah, yeah. So, but one of the things that I'm really looking forward to is this idea. I have an idea. I have a dream. And the dream is that I just keep a whole bunch of stuff on a big storage system, and I'm constantly taking the old drives out and putting the new drives in.
Yeah.
And the data is just—it's like kind of like a RAID 5. It's just migrating forward to the new media. So I'm not—you know—I just have terabytes of information that's sitting there, and we just kind of coax it forward, get rid of the old drives. So, anything else that was exciting?
I think it's got some sexy. I'm going to be anxious to see when it comes out. I'm thinking I'll give it a spin, but.
Well, one thing to remember is that you're not going to retire your old network. You're going to turn it to G. You know, your airport extremes are going to be turned to just, you'll turn B off and say G only.
I don't know if you want to turn B off.
No, you don't want to turn B. So then you keep one airport around that's only B.
Oh, I see.
Right? And the idea is that 802.11 slow or gracefully degrades. So if you have one B thing on your network, then everything talks B, so you lose all the speed advantage. So that means N goes away. So you want to have something that's just one.
Okay, you're still coming to my house next week.
Picks of the week, Merlin.
Well, I have a friend from college named Aaron Hilligus who has a really cool company. He teaches people how to do cocoa programming at Big Nerd Ranch. And he occasionally puts out little pieces of software. He just put something out that I like a lot called, I'm not allowed to have my computer open. What's it called? It's called Page Packer. And
that sounds really bad.
You know what? I'm not saying anything that you could use against me. Page Packer is an excellent little cocoa app. And here's what it does. You guys might remember that if you're fans of 43 folders, hi mom, you have seen the Pocket Mod, which is this great little flash app where you can go and kind of build your own little one page foldable booklet full of little pages. Well, so what Aaron has done is he's taken the idea of the Pocket Mod and combined it with Douglas Johnston's DIY Planner. This is probably all nonsense for you guys who are not in the hipster PDA culture, but suffice it to say, you can have this very robust way to build your own little portable one-page foldable booklet full of really cool on-the-go paper templates. We fold it in 8 little pieces. It turns into a little booklet. And so Page Packer is a really simple way to do that. Drag and drop, very easy to do. You print it out, and you're good to go.
Okay, so I was
BigNerdRanch.com.
I was when you started, I was like, whatever.
It's just one of Merlin's things. Again. I'm going to go check my email.
Yeah, if I was allowed to have my computer open, I'd be checking it. But so I was like, yeah, whatever. And then suddenly I realized what I could use it for, because I do the same thing, but in a much more rough way, which is when I go traveling, when I have long trips, not when I do like little trips to Toronto or whatever, but when I have long trips. I take my entire itinerary, all the contact information, my approval codes, my rental codes, the addresses, phone numbers. I have this long list of every phone number of every person I'm supposed to talk to over the next 3 weeks when I'm on, you know, and I make it all 6-point, and I print it all in this one long line, and then I fold it up and I put it in my wallet, and that is my, I call it my analog trio. You know,
right. Absolutely.
His is way better.
Well, what's neat about it is it also uses this really cool little method where, which I guess is kind of obvious to people who've thought about it, but you can take a piece of paper, fold it into 8 pieces, make a single cut, and it turns into a booklet.
Yeah. It's really cool.
It's
awesome. Pretty neat. And
so
if you haven't seen it, check out PocketMod. PocketMod's, no, it's free. It's free Cocoa app.
You know what the cool thing about
And if that, it's if it's not called Page Packer, Aaron, I'm really sorry. Aaron played sax in a band that I was in college. So how funny.
You know what's
is
cool
that?
About Page Packer?
What?
You can drag stuff from the cartoon program, iComic, and
make your own comic
that's squished.
Oh, that is sharp.
Isn't that cool?
That's my pick.
All right.
John.
John has a piece of paper he's consulting.
Dash code.
Oh.
Now, I talked about this a little bit at the party when we were drinking beers and changed my mind and then tried to say Scrivener.
Hard to say Scrivener after a couple beers.
Which is not my pick this week, but dash code is. I got to actually spend some time with it.
You made a dash? What is dash?
What is dash code?
Well, dash code is a beta tool from Apple. It's from the Apple developer connection.
How do you become an Apple developer?
And you down
spanking machine. Apple spanking machine.
And it lets you make dashboards.
But you don't have to be a developer, you don't technically have to pay for anything.
No, you don't have to pay for anything. You just have to give up some information, your name, address, telephone number.
This isn't the $500.
This is the free thing, okay. Right? So anybody can do this, but you have to go and actually make an account on the Apple developer site. And then once you get there, then you can see stuff like documentation for the Macs, you know, like the iPod connector, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's pretty technical. Anyway, but this is not. The idea is that with dash code, you can make countdown, RSS, podcast, photocast, a daily feed, a gauge, you know, like a speed gauge or something like that. But the coolest thing is Quartz Composer. So you can put Quartz Composer stuff in that.
Quartz Composer.
What's an example of how would you use that?
Okay, so for example, my birthday party is coming up February 6th, 8 o'clock. Be there.
Subtle.
Yeah, subtle. We'll post that. Anybody who's listening can come to the party.
Where is it?
I'm not telling.
I'm going to guess Zeitgeist.
Yeah, it's probably going to be at Zeitgeist.
Going to be it.
Which is kind of a really
fun.
So
you built your own
So I built countdown. My own countdown timer, and it took me all of 10 minutes at the very most.
How much code did you have to write?
I had to write no code.
No code?
No code.
Is it like
no.
a whiz- is it a
no
WYSIWYG?
Code. It's a WYSIWYG. And so the thing is you can drag graphics into it for your foreground, your background, all the other stuff. You can put text in it.
You can have an RSS reader?
And you can make an RSS reader in about the same amount of time. All you have to do is draw the, you know, you basically drag and drop. So you draw a scroll box for text, and then you aim the feed into that you define the type.
So it's kind of like HyperCard, a little bit.
It's kind of like HyperCard,
but
not
widgets.
HyperCard. So a lot of the code's generated for you, and you can go and there's a bunch of stuff in it that's amazing. One of my biggest problems when I was trying to develop widgets last year, or dashboards, what do they call them?
Dashboard widgets.
Things that go in that F12 land. There's no debugger. So basically, and you couldn't even do, you know, printfs or whatever, because there was no way of even writing a file. It was just like this hair-tearing experience that I hated doing it. And so this has got a debugger so that you can go and do steps, so you can watch variables, so that you can go and actually see the code that's going on. You can have the dashboard running in the foreground.
And you need to install the developer tools?
No, you don't have to install
Do you need Xcode installed?
No, you don't have to have any
Nothing.
Of the developer.
There goes my Wednesday.
Thursday, I'm on a plane all day, and I'm going to be making it
with your three batteries.
So it's about 18 and a half meg to download the thing, and then it installs. So the only trick is this. When you go to look for it in the applications folder, it's not there. So you have to go to the root of your hard drive. Look for the developer folder, and inside there is the applications where dash code goes.
Sneaky bastards.
No. If you install the whole Xcode stuff, you know, all the things, the developer tools, which is free, which is the most incredible thing that Apple's ever done, is give away the developer tools. Here, no
I
charge.
I think we should start a Mac break that's just dedicated to writing code. Because everybody could have it. It's like the application that everybody could have. We could teach everybody how to do Hello World.
Well, that would be called Mac Break Dev.
And that would be, wouldn't it?
That would be.
And so, if we did that, we would call it MacBreak Dev, and we would start doing ones. Would you do that? Would you be interested?
I'd be happy to.
All right.
So anyway, that's my pick of the week. Download it. I'll post my birthday thing so you can see that.
Hey, and if you're listening and you want to see a MacBreak Dev, then come up to the twit.tv.
Yeah.
Just go to the public forum for the show and let us know. And we'll do it anyway
because I have a big interest in this stuff.
Oh, you weren't supposed to tell them that. We're supposed to find out whether they're really
interested.
I'm not
going to do it anyway. Okay, convince me.
The people's interest will depend on how fast we do it. Will be based on people's interest. So
I got a microphone.
Got a pick, Alex?
I have a pick, and I would like to point out
how much is it, Alex?
I would like to point out that it is less than $700.
Does it have noodles?
It does have noodles, and it is less than $700.
So what's your pick, Alex?
I would like to point out that it is less than $700. Somebody thinks that all I talk about
is... Can you pull a key with it? That's the other thing.
You probably could pull a key with it.
I deserve so much more ribbon than this. That I will happily take all this ribbon.
Okay, so I haven't started really playing with it yet, but I play with it a little at the show. So I'm going to call out my pick because it looks so cool. And I talked about it a little bit on MacBreak last week.
Pen it?
No, it's not Pennant.
We got so much flack from people about liking that so much. Oh, I believe that if you look carefully, you will see this technology has existed for quite some time.
Yeah, but it's really cool.
It was really cool.
It was
so dorky.
It was really well done. That's all I got to say. It vibrates when you... Okay,
it's
so
got
it's
the little Pennant. Wii controller thing. We didn't even mention
that's
that.
That's not my pick.
Sorry.
Oh, so, that thing.
Easy Draw. Spelled with a Z. Let me tell you how hard it is to find them on the web. So this is like a, you have to really look around. EasyDraw.com. And it's E-A-Z-Y draw.com. These guys are like in Wisconsin. And it is like, if you want to do stuff that you would do in Illustrator, but you don't want to pay for Illustrator, and you don't want the complexity of Illustrator. I have to say, and I know that we'll probably have some people out there from Adobe that are going to, you know, but I haven't really needed anything. I'm not a print designer. I mean, I used to be, but I don't do it anymore. I used to know every quick trick, you know, that was inside of Illustrator. I now need about all the features that were in Illustrator 3.
I know.
Actually, it was Illustrator 6.
6 was the magic one.
Wasn't 7 the one where they made it easier?
No, we hated 7.
7 was the worst Illustrator release.
Six 7 was like OS X. But there was one leap where it got so much easier to use.
That was 6.
Yeah. No, 6 was the one that really...
Before that, the Bezier curve everything. Stuff was just like another language.
It had everything I needed. It had everything that I wanted. It still does. And if I
it's say, the Word 5 of drawing programs.
It is. Word 5-1.
Yeah. Word 5-1, Illustrator anyway, 6.
So, yeah, but there's a classicness to it, you know, when it made that turn. And then 7 was the worst release of Illustrator ever. And then 8 continued this complexity where I can't use Pathfinder correctly. You know, you can never figure out how to make this stuff work. You can never, it just, it became this like Frankenstein. Here's the problem that software companies have is that they have to keep on adding features.
Yeah. And so this has like the 20% of features that you actually need.
Well, the worst feature that they ever added in Illustrator was changing the document format to PDF, and they didn't tell anybody that.
You can still do Illustrator exports.
No, but they changed the default entire the native format
And if you're doing print design, you need Illustrator. I mean, it is the app that you have to have it. But if you're like Joe Schmo at home and you want to just do some EPS files, you want to do some print ready, you know,
technical drawing,
you know, or just technical drawing or your assign or something else that's going to print really big. If you do it in Photoshop or you do it in Photoshop, whatever elements, it's going to be pixelated and it's going to look soft when you make it bigger. But if you want to make something that is infinite resolution, it has the nice smooth Bezier curves, but I think actually the Bezier curves are done better in EasyDraw.
How much is this app, Alex?
$130.
You should buy 6 copies.
So I think I have to buy 6 copies now because
your finance people are gonna think there's something amiss.
What? He's talking about software that is less than $700.
You know, you're not Alex at all.
The coolest thing. So this only story I have about EasyDraw.
Alex was tired. Macworld was hard. I figured I'd step in.
EasyDraw 4 years ago or 5 years ago at Macworld, and I was like, why in the world are these guys dedicating themselves to making MacDraw all over again?
Right.
When nobody wants MacDraw,
but
it turns out there's a need for this tool.
Well, and I think that as I said, I don't know where it was. It wasn't on my radar until literally this year when I walked in. I looked at it. I was like, I know what that is, because I'm always looking for ways that have this stuff be less expensive, not be $700. Sure, right. And it is anyway. It's got a, they got a download. You can go to their website and easydraw.com and just download it. You can play with it, figure out if it's enough for you. But it'll also bring in, by the way, it'll open EPS files from Illustrator. So if someone made Illustrator files, now it won't open like the brand new one with all the
right. But you can export to EPS,
yeah, or export to PDF, and it'll open up in the vector file, so you can go back and edit those vectors as well. So I think that
things you've made with the Pennant, you can open
the things that you made with the Pennant. Yes, I think you can open it.
Squee.
Okay, one more thing. We're almost done.
How we do?
We're close.
Yeah.
We need a wine list. And it's not from Napa.
Alex, tell us what the wine list is.
The wine list
is a brand new thing for Mac.
Well, we've done this once before. But okay. The Apple wine list is
this to inoculate ourselves against being called fanboys?
No. It's that we talk a lot about
for a beef.
It's just that there are things that we don't like. I mean, I think that we need to tell people these are the things that they need to know that we don't like about the Mac. And I think that, you know, it's not anything more than just there are things that really when I think about this wine list is when I raise my hands in fury there'll be something I raise my hands in fury about the Mac. You know, once a day.
Yeah.
and Ben Durbin, who's been on TWIM, he always gives me a hard time because he primarily uses a PC, but knows how to use Macs really, really well. And I primarily use Mac, and yeah, I don't really use PCs. And so Ben, you know, always gives me a hard time about the fact that, oh yeah, it's supposed to work. It just works, because that's what I always say, you know. And so what are your wines about the Mac?
You know, when you have a flash drive and it's sitting there on the computer ready to go, there's not a single file open, but the directory's not even open. It's just sitting there. Mm. And you go, I got to go. And you pull the flash drive out, and then the Mac goes, hey, device removal.
And does it really matter?
It doesn't matter, because here's the thing. If that hasn't been used for 30 minutes, be ready for it to go away.
I really want that message, I have to admit. My wine related to that is I would like that message just to be have one of those little buttons that says, don't warn me next time. Because I don't care.
Don't care.
I
care if there's a file open, you know, if I have something that's open on it. But if it's just there, then be smart about what that is. I mean, geez, we've been looking at that, accessing it, seeing did anything change, did anything change, and then nothing changed, nothing's open on it. So just like let that go.
I don't know if this is the same wine, but we were talking about this off mic. This is maddening to me. I've talked before about how I've started using Amazon S3 for backup because it's crazy cheap. And you can do this amazing backup. There's a wonderful application that I talked about before. I plugged on the show called Jungle Disk Monitor that makes it very easy. And so what it does is it makes a WebDAV image, or WebDAV, you know, drive that pops up. Okay, so WebDAV images, network drives, mounted computers of any kind.
Cause hell.
Oh, my God. If for whatever reason in this world that device is no longer available,
it just keeps on looking.
It's a functionally like a hang. It's a hang.
No, but you, if you go to Starbucks, I find, and buy a coffee, by the time you come back, it's fine.
I think that's crazy making.
I couldn't find it.
I kept looking for you.
Now, John, is that the same wine or is that a different wine?
No, it's a different. Well, it's a related wine.
It's a related wine because there's something about it not knowing what.
I just don't understand.
It's like, get a clue. There's a hierarchy here. I mean, we can find this. I changed networks, right? I'm no longer talking to my, quote, home network where all that stuff is. I'm now talking to something called Starbucks. Gee, that ought to be a clue that those network drives aren't there. And just, like, gracefully deal with this problem.
That happens to me probably twice a week when I'm running Jungle Disk Monitor, which has a new release
today. I have
today.
To say, it happens to me almost every day.
Well, it's crazy making.
Oh. And then I, you know, there's just like this, why?
Why should I have to go unmount before I put my... You know, before I go,
I have a quick mini plug. I do not have this in front of me. I'll be happy to find this URL and send it to you, John. But I got sent a wonderful shell script from a guy whose name's escaping me, and I apologize, guy. But I use this 10 times a day. He's giving me a shell script called eject all. And it basically ejects every drive, and I have that associated in Quicksilver. Uh-huh. And so if I type EJ capital RU, it'll unmount everything, and there's no dragging, no grabbing, no nothing, and it's super fast.
Cool. So, that'll help.
Yeah. So if you use Quicksilver, that's a really, or for the shell for that matter, it's a quick way. Hey, Alex, what's your wine?
You took it.
I did not.
You did take my wine.
Oh, do you want a different one?
I'm looking for another wine.
Why don't you? You know what?
I'm blanking.
You know what?
I have. Give it to the
finder.
Here's
Alex's wine. Okay, so sound control panel. God, why does that thing just like tear my hair out every single time? I don't want it to talk to the internal microphone. I want to talk to the external microphone, and I want
it
to
have
stick
something
there.
Like a location manager. There no, should no, be no, a thing
have,
like
I'm
a location
have, I'm
manager.
Actually just gonna have a pro. I'm gonna have actually a pro app wine.
Okay,
do it.
This is gonna be. Here's my pro app wine. Is that soundtrack? You're listening to this show. You're listening to MacBreak Weekly, hopefully. Theoretically, you're listening
to
MacBreak Weekly.
If it doesn't crash.
And you're listening to this show, and it's going to be edited. It's going to be put out on iTunes. It is going to be edited on Soundtrack Pro, but recorded Cubase LE.
Oh, yeah. This is a really
so I have a FirePod, and I am now going
what
to
is,
my
what
FireWire.
Is a FirePod?
My FirePod is an 8-channel mixer that's feeding into FireWire, and I would do this all in Soundtrack Pro. Except that Soundtrack Pro only does stereo. So I can only take two channels in. I can pick any channel that's coming in from my FirePod. But now I can manage.
It's like having a store that doesn't accept quarters.
I can manage, I think, up to 128 tracks. But I can only record two at a time. And I'm not clear why that's the case. Now, Logic, I can do as many. I mean, I don't know, 128 tracks or 32 tracks or something like that. GarageBand. I can do at least 8 tracks. The problem with both Logic and GarageBand, which is based on the Logic engine, is that they're not really stable after about 20 or 30 minutes. I mean, now a lot of guys at Apple can probably send me emails talking about, but we've tested it. We've done a lot of it. And you put 8 tracks in there and you run 20 or 30 minutes on either one of those. They're not built for that. Logic is built for little songs that are maybe 10 minutes long, and it's really good for that. It's just not so good when you start adding. What we find is that after 40 minutes, about 60% of the time, GarageBand would just go, you know, I'm done. You know, it didn't, there was no error message. There was no nothing. It just stopped. GarageBand, it just gets sluggish. And so you really want to use, Soundtrack works really, really well. It's just that it's only in
Do you know the GarageBand trick?
No, it's turn the beats. Are you talking
oh,
about the beats?
That, you know that trick?
No. Does
that make any difference?
No, it doesn't make any difference. Yeah, you can turn the beats down. Here's the problem with that. If you add any music that you wanted to put into it.
It's at one beat per minute.
that's pretty much what it sounds like. And so that's one problem. But the other problem is that you can extend it out by because you literally will run out, both in Logic and GarageBand, you'll run out of beats at like 1 hour and 6 minutes and something or other. And for a long time, our podcast maximums were 1 hour and 6 minutes because – we didn't want to run out of beats.
See, maybe this is a good constraint for us,
hey,
though.
Shut it.
All right,
we're out of here.
What's our final time?
Where can they find more of you, John?
Well, if they want to talk to me, the best place is twit.tv/forums. And once again, I apologize. It costs $2 to get in.
Cover charge. You know, I usually talk about my website, 43folders.com. But today... you like that? But today, I'm going to get all Scott Moore, and I'm going to tell you about another website that I do called thatphoneguy.com.
Very funny.
And,
it's very funny.
I don't know about that, but it's this guy who has a lot of personal problems, and it's a video podcast that is now officially available as a podcast on iTunes, and I encourage you to subscribe therein if you enjoy That Phone Guy. But you can find out more information at thatphoneguy.com.
Is thatphoneguy.com kid compatible?
Is no. it what?
Is it kid compatible?
No.
The thing I love about now that I'm on Blip TV is that I can do ratings for each one of these. And I can put an
R.
MA. Yeah, because see what I think a lot of people don't get about that phone guy is he has a lot of personal problems. And he gets...
He has Tourette's.
So somebody's kids isn't going to want to...
You know, it's like...
Meet
it's
the phone guy.
It's, yeah. It's not for kids. Alex, where can people find more about you? Do you like how I'm like your sidekick? I got your back.
Thanks, man. You can find more about me where am I? Pixelcore.com.
Pixelcore.com, PIXELCORPS.com. You don't really have like a canonical page there. You need
You don't have
you need
Alex
a weblog
blog
or blog. There. That's what you need.
I've been thinking about doing that audio and making it a podcast.
Alex.
I've recently discovered how deep the Pixelcore site goes with all of your systems about systems and your diagrams about who does what. It's intoxicating. I learned all about what Eleuther really does, apart from Run Your Life, and I learned so much about everybody.
The Pixelcore has a lot of
Got a lot of systems.
You get there, and it's got this one page. It's got this one page that just looks like whatever.
Should we tell everybody about the big system?
No.
We'll hold off?
Yeah, we'll hold off the big system. So anyway, That's it. That's enough of the shenanigans. This is
so
Alex.
How are we doing on time? How are we doing on time?
We're close. Let's not talk about it on the air.
So
thank
let's
you
do
very
the,
much.
Extra here.
No. This is Mac Break. See, now you threw my whole thing off. You're not supposed to ask
and
about the
time. Another Mac Break Weekly is broken.
No,
we broke our Mac.
We got rid of that. Break time is over.
I like this.
I was telling Madeline, I really wish I liked the Mac Break tune more.
You don't like it?
It's okay. I find myself walking around the house going, bah, nah, bah, nah, bah, nah, and I don't like that. I'd rather be singing like Kiss on My List by Home Notes.